Welcome back to Burning the Ships, presented by 608B Capital. Today I'm sitting down with one of the hosts and founder of my favorite outdoor television show. It is Heartland Bow Hunter, and I'm sitting down with Michael Hunsucker today. So this podcast, you know, we talk to entrepreneurs and just folks from all walks of life that are chasing their dreams, that are doing things that they're passionate about, and they share their stories about, you know, how they started and how it evolved to where they're at now, from a mindset standpoint, and, you know, everything else that goes along with that. But what I've been trying to do is I've been connecting with a lot of folks that are in industries that I'm passionate about outside of, you know, my industry, which is real estate. But, you know, I have hobbies and passions that I follow and look up to people that are really creating and generating content in areas that I have a lot of interest in. And one of those interests is the outdoors, obviously. You guys who follow me and know me know that that is one of my biggest passions, is hunting and the outdoors. So I've been able to connect with a lot of successful entrepreneurs that are doing big things in that space, right? And it's important to me, not just to kind of expose folks that may not know much about that world or that niche or whatever it is. So that's a part of it, but also kind of open people's eyes to there's more than one way or the cookie cutter ways that we all know about to make a living, to build a career. And these folks are doing it following a passion, first and foremost, and then building a business chasing that passion. And Michael was no different than that. So I'm going to introduce Michael now, and I know you guys will enjoy his story, getting to know a little bit more kind of behind the scenes of what he's got going on. But Michael Hunsucker, he's the co-founder and host of Heartland Bowhunter, an award-winning outdoor television show that has revolutionized the way hunting is portrayed on screen. Known for its cinematic storytelling, artistic filming, and authentic approach, Heartland Bowhunter has become a leading voice in the hunting industry, inspiring hunters across the globe. A Missouri native, Michael's passion for bow hunting started at a young age, evolving into a lifelong dedication to the outdoors. Over the years, he has combined his love for hunting with his creative eye, setting a new standard for outdoor media. Whether he's chasing white-tailed deer in the Midwest or pursuing big game across the world, Michael's commitment to conservation and ethical hunting is at the core of everything he does. Off-screen, Michael is an entrepreneur, family man, and advocate for preserving the traditions of hunting for future generations. With years of experience, unmatched storytelling skills, and a genuine love for the outdoors, Michael continues to inspire audiences to embrace the hunting lifestyle and connect with nature in meaningful ways. Join us as we dive into his journey, the stories behind Heartland Bowhunter, and his insights on hunting, entrepreneurship, parenting, and beyond. Michael Hunsucker, how you doing? Welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Hey, I'm good. I'm doing well. Trying to stay warm here in Missouri. I'm sure you're getting that cold snap hitting you guys too.
Yeah, it was 12 degrees. I'm in Southeast Virginia. It was like 12 degrees this morning, which is very rare for us. And we had a dusting of snow, so that shut down the entire, you know, county. So no school, kids are at home, all that good stuff. But
yeah, I saw some stuff in Florida. Florida people getting snow. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I'm gonna start with something fun before we get into who you are and all that stuff. But you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, right?
You bet. Yeah, you bet.
We all going to the game Sunday?
We are, yep.
Yeah, so I'm a Miami Dolphins fan, so I've never experienced any excitement around, you know, late in the playoffs, but I absolutely hate the Buffalo Bills. So I
do, yeah.
Biggest Chiefs fan this weekend, so I hope that works out in y'all's favor. So
man, I've been just dying with all the memes and all the stuff this week. Like, it's so funny you being on this side of the dynasty. You know, I remember being on the other side and yeah. Tom Brady and the Patriots, and just like you get tired. Everybody gets tired of people winning and winning and winning and winning. And like, you know, I had a lot of respect, obviously, for and have a lot of respect for Tom Brady, but man, you just hated to have to face him. And it's funny with Mahomes, like, you know, he when he first kind of hit the scene, started doing well, like he was different, his passing style and just the way he played, and he carries himself really well, as all the, you know, the greats do. But like, he people loved him. They were all about him. Oh yeah, and they love to see the Chiefs winning. And then now, you know, we're starting to get to that, you know, that third, fourth year of just dominating, and they're like, everybody's like, ah, oh man, I hate the Chiefs. I want somebody else to win for once.
So no, I am definitely not in that camp this weekend anyway. So I, you know, around me, obviously in Virginia, everybody are Redskins or Commanders fans, and so you know, that's a lot of excitement around here as well. So been a fun playoff. So
Yeah, and that guy, that quarterback's something special. I you know, I it seems like everybody's kind of sticking with the Eagles, but man, I would not be surprised if they made it.
No, and the Eagles are a little banged up, and you know, the Skins are on a hot streak, and I mean it's that the first half of their game this past weekend, that might have been the best half of football I've watched in years. I
Looked
love to
good.
call it, but it was exciting. But Mike Hunsucker, so Heartland Bowhunter, my man, I appreciate you. Y'all have been my favorite outdoor show for many years. I mean, y'all been around since what? When did y'all start? 08, 09?
Yeah, like way back then. Yeah,
Yeah.
this, I mean, officially this is our 18th season is the what we're getting going to release this year. So we started obviously a few years before that, kind of figuring out what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. So it's been a long time. It's crazy. It's been a wild ride.
Yeah, man. And I mean, and what I've had a few folks from the outdoor industry on in the last couple months, and mainly, you know, what I like about it is, you know, the with this podcast, I'm trying to, you know, just inspire folks to be all in on something and be passionate and go, you know, and not look back, just go head first into whatever you're passionate about. And a lot of my guests are, you know, entrepreneurs in the real estate space and other businesses, but there's a lot of other industries out there, and you guys kind of have, you know, obviously done very well in that. So I've been trying to bring on folks that are in spaces that I have personal and selfish interest in, and you know, it's like to kind of peel the onion back, and we'll get into all of it, but you know, how you built the business, what the vision was, and stuff like that. So we'll start with, you know, just introduce who you are, where you're from, and kind of how you guys got started in this industry and with Heartland Bowhunter.
So my name is Michael Hunsucker, and I'm out of Kansas City area, Kansas City, Missouri. And my business partner, Sean Luckel, and I, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and I guess, you know, the initial stages of this date all the way back to, you know, when we started hunting and filming together for fun, just messing around. And one thing kind of led to another. We were in high school and going to college and trying to figure out what we wanted to do. And both of our parents have that entrepreneurial background. You know, my parents are in the restaurant business. Sean's dad is in the machine shop business and just is an all around entrepreneur. And we knew we wanted to own our own business. We just didn't know what we wanted to do. And obviously, the simplest answer is what you're passionate about. And so we started filming hunts just for fun, sharing them with friends and family. And the outdoor industry was a whole different beast. You know, back then there was only, you know, 20 or so, maybe, you know, TV shows or people that were, you know, putting out hunting content. And, you know, a lot of it was like on DVD and that type of stuff. And, you know, with your podcast appealing to the people that aren't maybe diehard hunters, like that's kind of the story that we lived growing up in, you know, in the suburbs of Kansas City. Sean and I were diehard hunters, but like most of our friends and people, family, people we knew weren't. And, there was, you know, the stuff that was out in this industry at the time didn't necessarily paint the picture of what hunting was, you know, to him and I. And, you know, if I showed some kid I went to high school with and a hunting show, they're like, oh my gosh, like you just like to kill stuff. It's all about killing stuff. And I was like, well, that like that's a portion of it, but that's not what it's about, especially being, you know, we really took to archery hunting specifically. And it's such a process driven, you know, adventure, and there's so much that goes into it. And we were like, you know, basically wanted to be able to create something that we could show people that didn't hunt and they could understand and get it. And, you know, whether they, you know, agree with it or not, they would at least understand, you know, where we're coming from. And, you know, this dates back to, you know, Sean and I just getting started with our dads and hunting with friends and family in camp, and the camaraderie and the brotherhood that comes along with it all. That's really what got me hooked in the early stages for sure.
Yeah, and you guys, that I think that's what, you know, obviously I mean, y'all are, if not the top, one of the top like content producers in the industry, right? In the outdoor industry. But I think what draws, as a fan of that and what you guys are doing, what draws me and certainly a lot of folks is your ability to tell stories, right? And you know, and you mentioned like in the early days of outdoor TV shows, it was, you know, we're in Kansas and they're filming, you're up a tree stand and they're cutting away to the shot of the deer and then the celebration after, and a lot of it, you know, it just, it's not a lot of storytelling behind it. But y'all, the way you guys, you know, are able to implement the family aspect of it and the emotions that go about it. I mean, I don't know how many episodes I've watched, to be honest, that literally have brought tears to my eyes, like watching, you know, you guys, your children killing their first deer and stuff like that, and getting all that and capturing it. So y'all, I think y'all's ability to do that and tell a story through it, that's one piece of it. But in my opinion, y'all's production value is head and shoulders above anybody else in the industry. And I would imagine that, because it's been that way for years now, was that a top priority going into all this? I mean, to keep the production top tier?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of our, you know, what we were like, you know, Sean and I are going to school together, going through entrepreneurship school, and we're learning all about starting a business. And we both had worked for our parents in, you know, early age, and it's had the curtains opened up to us a little bit about, you know, what it takes and all that kind of stuff. But the big thing was like, all right, like, what's going to be our competitive advantage? You know, because how are we going to be different and stand out? Because that's the deal with this industry, is it's a passion industry. So everybody wants to be a part of it. And so people are willing to do it for nothing. Most of the, you know, brands out there probably don't even make any money. They just do it to facilitate their kind of passion. And so for us, we're like, well, we want to, you know, do that, but we want to make money. So we want to make a living.
Right.
And so yeah, I mean, I think our two things, you know, getting started were quality, number one. You know, the quality was not there. And other productions, storytelling is just kind of included all into that. But then also relatability was another thing. It seemed like the industry was pretty macho, and like people were like trying to make themselves look super cool and badass, and like they were making things more out to be more than they really were. And so it was like, you know, how can we do this and do it in an appropriate way? Plus, we were kids in college. We didn't have money to go on these big outfitted hunts and kill these giant deer. Like, we were just gonna hunt properties that we had, you know, permission to hunt, properties that Sean's dad owned or whatever. And so we wanted to be relatable, and we wanted to be quality.
Yeah, and y'all obviously have accomplished that. What, so, but you know, back to the starting of the business around it, right? You mentioned y'all were not getting into this. I mean, there was the passion aspect of it, is what you like to do. But you have to have a vision and put together a business plan. Y'all were not, you just mentioned it, not the folks that were, I want to chase my passion, I don't care if I ever make any money. Like, I
Right.
can't imagine that was the mindset, and you just said it. But so where did it start? Like, how did, I mean, you don't go shoot videos and good quality videos and then somebody pays you for those videos. So y'all had to build a brand and reputation. What were the first steps in that process?
Well, actually, the very first step was we started manufacturing tree arms for filming hunts,
Oh,
because
really?
there was just nothing on the market that was out there and available that was like quality. And the people that did have shows, you know, were having these one-off tree arms made from engineer shops and that type of stuff. And so with Sean's dad's background being in machining and stuff, we were like, well, why don't we create a product, and we're going to create the most beautiful, powerful videos, and we're going to promote that product. And where I mean, it obviously opened a lot of doors, because we started selling these arms to people who were in the industry producing shows. And so it was great. Where we got a little too far ahead of ourselves was thinking of the market. And obviously the market for a really high end, you know, $1,000 tree arm is gonna be pretty small. It's just people that are producing TV shows. So
And then trying to buy it every year.
exactly. And there, yeah, and the one we were making was really, really good. And so you know, we learned from that, adapted. We partnered with another company in the industry and mass manufactured, you know, smaller versions of the arm, more consumer based. And ultimately, we're not selling tree arms anymore, but that definitely opened the door to learning the business side of it and learning, if we're going to have a TV show, how does that work? How do we create something to pitch it to the network? And how do we secure sponsorships and investor dollars? And how do we make all this work? And it's a tough business, even if, you know, if you're strictly in the content world of creating a TV show, it's definitely a tough business. And so we learned early that we needed to kind of diversify our business and not only focus on our brand, but maybe helping other brands grow. And our kind of unique, unique approach in the industry. And so naturally the companies we worked with that we kind of brought on as sponsors wanted us to create stuff for them. And so we kind of built a production company in conjunction with our own, you know, content brand and show, and kind of grew them both at the same time.
Okay. So early on, y'all were identifying different streams of revenue within the industry, it sounds like. So you're doing your videos, you got the tree arms, you got and now you're producing for other companies and brands. So from there, you know, when, how long, or, because I'm curious from like a production standpoint, how much content do you have to have banked? So hunts and kills and things like that on camera, ready to go and produce before you take it to a network and pitch it to them. So like, you know, y'all launched the show in I think you said 08 or 07, but how much content, years of content did you have ready to go before that?
Yeah, we had a few years, and just kind of like basically, you know, capturing stuff to promote the tree arm initially, you know, and then once we, you know, we kind of had a group of guys here locally in Kansas City, the buddies of ours that we hunt together with, we started getting them, you know, tree arms, and everybody who was on board was like, hey, let's take a run at this and do this. And so we started amassing quite a bit of stuff, so much so that it was like, this is more than we need just to promote a tree arm. And then, so we were like, well, what's the next step there? And, so we created the pilot episode and pitched it to the network. And, the way the outdoor industry television model works is the time buy model. So you buy the airtime from the network and then you sell the advertisements, as you know, they sell some of them, but you sell some, and that's how you generate revenue. And, I have more than a handful of people that I remember this day. It was just like, you'll never make money. Like, you know, doing a TV show, you're not going to make money doing it. And that was just fuel to motivate me even more. But, you know, we had kind of a unique approach, and it was definitely like a slow adaptation to get sponsors to buy into what we were doing, because everybody else out there was just, you know, cramming products down people's throat. And, you know, I couldn't have killed this deer without my Bowtech bow, and like, you know, like just really cheesy stuff. And, you know, I had learned enough even at that age in the marketing world that like, that's not what sells product. Like, what sells product is when people, you know, subliminally are seeing these products being used by somebody who they look up to, or in a successful manner, to where, you know, you reach them enough times that it, you know, pushes them to make a purchase and influence them to make a purchase. And so, you know, at first we had some companies that were like, yeah, we want to sponsor you guys. We've heard about you. You know, we want you to tell everybody this is the best broadhead you've ever shot. And we want you to talk about the specifics of the broadhead. And, we're like, man, we're not going to do that. That takes away from the story. It makes it seem like an ad, and we don't want it to seem like an ad, you know? And, it is crazy how things have evolved now back to the social media world, where there's a place for that type of stuff, you know, gear reviews and talking specifics about a product. But we never wanted to let that influence our main film or our main episode. Like, we wanted it to be all about the deer and the story. And, you know, we use other outlets for those opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, and it's authentic, man. It allows you to be and do
this authenticity.
And once you get brands that are okay with you guys being who you are, and they jump on board and support it, you're going to be more loyal to that brand as a company yourselves. And then your followers are also going to be more loyal. I mean, whether it's Bowtech, Matthews, PSC, whatever it is, if I see a someone that I follow and I enjoy their content because of their authenticity and they're using a particular product, I want to buy that product just to support them because they provide me so much value and content, right? So I think, yeah, and that's very refreshing, that especially early on, because y'all came in onto the scene in a time where that was not the norm. I mean, and it was, so y'all kind of bucked. Now, taking that approach, did you get any resistance in the industry or from your peers in the industry when you guys were doing that?
Yeah, for sure. From sponsors specifically, you know, I just remember, you know, obviously at an early stage in the business, you know, we're like looking for anybody who's interested in helping work with us. And we definitely had ones that just weren't going to work. You know, they just had their way of doing things. They wanted us to do a certain thing. And we said, you know, that's just not going to fly for us. And, you know, early on, when every dollar matters, when we're trying to get going and ramp up, like there's some tough decisions to be made. Fortunately now at this stage, you know, we are in a position where we get to work with who we want to work with for the most part. And obviously we spend a ton of time in the field, a lot of days in the field. So obviously we want to use the best of the best. And it definitely wasn't always the case, you know, to where you're like, well, I'd rather use this, but we're going to use this because they're a partner of ours kind of deal.
Right.
Now it's, you know, graduated to that stage, which is great because it's full transparent to, you know, our consumer and our viewer is like, if we're using something, yeah, there's a sponsor and it takes money to make this whole thing work, but we're using it because we want to use it.
Right. And I would imagine y'all have also kind of evolved to a place where your sponsors are relying on you guys for feedback on the products and using that feedback, you know, whereas early on you were just promoting their stuff. Now you're actually giving feedback on like, hey, this particular, you know, what a rangefinder, it could use this component to it, would make our lives a lot easier. And then they can go back to R&D and figure that out and implement it into products. So you're not only having influence on, you know, helping them sell products, but improve the products. And that's a great place to be, I would imagine. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we are super users in every aspect of the hunting world. And so, I joke about it because I'm a bit of a nightmare because I'm so particular in my gear and I like tear stuff apart. But our best partners love that. They say we have thick skin. If something sucks, please tell us it sucks. Like you're using it more than the guys who are, you know, in R&D and developing these products. And so we want to know. And I'll use Reconyx. Well, Vortex, for you mentioned the rangefinder. Vortex is awesome. We had a call actually a couple of weeks ago and they were just like, you know, what are we doing good? What are we sucking at? Like, here's our new line of stuff. Like, what do you think? Like, please tell us, like, full honesty. You're not going to hurt any feelings. And that is the relationship that you need. And Reconyx is another partner of ours, been with us since day one. And, you know, they come out with the best of the best in the cell camera app. And like, I'm going through and I feel like a monthly or every other month email to them about like, hey, what if we could do this? What if we could do that? And a lot of ideas get shot down, right? Because it's like, you know, it's like they're creating a product for a specific user. I'm a super user of that. So like, they're not going to create everything, you know, it has to make dollars and cents at the end of the day, but I enjoy that whole process of, you know, being involved in the development of stuff for sure.
Yeah. And that's great that y'all have been able to evolve to that. I want to go back a little bit, you know, as you guys started. So as you mentioned, I mean, y'all bootstrapped this thing where you had started, you had to create streams of revenue. You had to go out, there had to be a component of it of for probably several years of selling what you got, of selling this idea, this vision, whether it be to potential sponsors, potential people to, you know, produce content for their brands or sell to consumers and things like that. How much training or education did you guys get on this process of sailing, pitching an idea, pitching a vision, or is that something that came natural to you?
I would say, I mean, yeah, some of it definitely came somewhat natural to me. I'm a pretty, you know, outgoing guy and I, you know, tend to relate with people and talk with people well, but like, I'm not going to lie. I mean, going to that first ATA show, you know, and having this idea where everybody is knocking down their doors. And just getting somebody to listen was hard, to be honest. I mean, just getting their attention because all the time, all I get hit up is, oh, I got the new latest and greatest idea. Mm-hmm. And I think I would say the key to us kind of getting in those doors and getting our foot in those doors was kind of a humble approach. And you know, everybody just came out there and was like, oh, I got the latest and greatest, the best. Our show's the best. We're going to do this, this, and this. And, you know, we just had a humble approach about it. It was like, hey, like, you know, we're just chasing our dream kind of deal. We're doing what we love. We see an opportunity. We've seen success with other partners that have come on board and have bought into what we're doing. And we think we can kind of replicate with your brand. And the relationship side of the business is one of my favorite parts of it. I mean, building those relationships. And you know, like I said, we've got companies that we've worked with literally since day one. And most of our partners have been longstanding partners. So we've developed friendships. We've spent time in the field hunting with these folks. And so, like, I really do enjoy that side of it. And we have relationships to where, like, if we're not doing something that we need to be doing, like, they know they can call me and be like, hey, you know, we're hoping to get this, and like, no hard feelings. Like, let's work together, work to an end goal. Like, it takes both parties working together to be successful. And that's how we want it. We don't want a company to come up and approach us and with all this money and be like, hey, we got this big check, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like, and then we're not like, we know like, oh, we're never going to meet that expectation and it's going to go away next year. Like, nobody, short-term relationships don't do anybody any good in business and in life. And so, you know, we've definitely taken that approach of loyalty and open, honest, you know, transparency in business.
Yeah, it's refreshing to hear, man, because what y'all are doing, y'all, and you just mentioned it, it applies to not just business, but life. And y'all are applying fundamental, like, value principles in life as a human being to be loyal, to be authentic, to be real. Look long-term into relationships and feed those relationships. You're applying it to your business, and like, that can't fail, right? Yeah. Now,
yep.
Y'all along the way, y'all probably could have made much more money with certain, at certain points with certain sponsors by, I guess, compromising all those things, those values, but y'all chose not to. And that's very refreshing because it's not common, unfortunately, in business, you know, and yes. I see it a lot, like in, you know, I'm in real estate, so I see it a lot on that side. But it's very refreshing to hear someone that has come through all of that BS with all of that pressure to conform to, you know, other people's opinion of how you should do things just to get some extra money, and to hear that y'all never did that and have stayed true to who you are. It's very refreshing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the real estate business is a great example. Obviously it's hugely relationship driven and it's big on trust and all those things. And so, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, if your plan is to do this long-term and to grow long-term, like, you know, and the industry's small, man, the industry is small. Like, you know, we're never going to chase a paycheck, and we're relying on the consumer of our content to respect, you know, what we're doing. And if we're changing back and forth between bow companies and switching every other year, they're going to be like, well, these guys are just paying, you know, whoever's paying them to shoot their bow, they're going to say that's the bow they like. And so, you know, truthfully, we don't have to do that, fortunately. And there's people that do, and we're just blessed to be in the position we're in.
Right. So along the way, this kind of goes in with the theme of this podcast, just kind of like no plan B, no looking back mentality. Was there ever a point along this journey? I mean, now you guys are, or there is no looking back, but was there ever a point where you and Sean had conversations like, dude, this might not be working, or what are we going to do if this doesn't work out? What are we going to do? Eventually we got to start families. We got to start paying for things. Was there ever those conversations? If there were, what was the plan B?
Yeah, I don't know that we ever had a plan B necessarily. I know that we obviously, like any business, experienced some growing pains and some, you know, tough conversations and tough situations that we had to navigate through. But being that we were literally, you know, college kids, and we're in college, and, you know, we had nothing. We didn't have mortgages and all these bills. And so we literally bootstrapped it, and we were able to, like, you know, grow our lifestyle with, you know, our business. And it's not like jumping ship in your mid 30s and starting a new career where it's like, all right, I got to have a quick game plan here to reach a certain revenue point. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have to figure something out. And so I don't know that we ever did have a plan B. And, you know, for us, you know, and some of that naivety, you know, young age, we were naive to certain things, and some of that helped us, I think, a lot, just because we were taking risks that maybe shouldn't have. ones that some, you know, a lot of them did pan out, some didn't, but, you know, not having the pressures of this has to be to this level by year three and this level by year four, and having partners that were, you know, understanding. Sean's dad was one of our, you know, was a investor at an early stage, and his best friend, Brad Burdett, you know, was an investor too. And they were huge, huge, great mentors to us, and were the kind of, they were, but they've done enough in business to, you know, they're not the type of guys that are just going to like try to do things for us and hand it over. Like they would never. And so they were like, just they've, and still to this day, just kind of let us run with it kind of deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was kind of cool, you know, it was just, you know, as I have kids now, and I'm, you know, they're, you know, my oldest is going to be going to middle school next year. And so still pretty young, but like, you know, you try to instill those values in your kids, because you want them to work hard and you want them to understand the value of hard work ethic. And you definitely, you know, I'm definitely not the type that's going to just make their life cush and hand everything over to them. And, you know, if they want to pursue, you know, something in the industry, obviously I'm going to be all for that. And, you know, hopefully eventually they'll be guiding me on some hunts, taking me out. But at the moment I'm the cameraman guide, but yeah, so it's been a cool process to kind of, you know, reflect on that and see, you know, how far we come, and to know the trust and the, you know, the amount of, trust that those guys had in us at a young age when we didn't really know that much, you know, we were just learning as we went. But it was good to have, like I said, Sean and I were in college, we went to college together, and we're in entrepreneur, you know, business management, entrepreneurship. And so we were not only learning the book side of it, but we were doing. And so there definitely was some good correlation there as well.
Right. Yeah, no, it's, and I want to come back to the being a dad and the kids and how things have evolved there. You mentioned you and Sean went to college together. So, and you mentioned y'all didn't just jump ship after, you know, in your 30s or whatever. So to tell you a little bit about my story, my business partner and I went to college together. We both went on to work in corporate careers for me for 18 years. And it was in sales. So I had, like, I've always picked my career moves in ways that allowed me more freedom and flexibility to be in the woods. So like I've done that my entire life. And, but that career evolved to become more demanding on my time, a lot more travel as I kind of escalated in the company. And I had been building a real estate business on the side with my partner, but we both left, at 40 years old. So we jumped ship, completely cut off that revenue source. Now we had built a business, but then went all in on that. And we both had young kids. So we did have that pressure of we gotta make this work. Plus, unfortunately, we have our good resume and things like that. So if it did fail, and we're well on our way now, but if it did fail, we could lean back on that. But it was a big risk. Now, to hear you talk about going all in without having those pressures of like feeding the kids and buying diapers and things like that, but now you've kind of built your life within this culture that y'all have. And you mentioned raising the kids now and more behind the camera. I want to talk about that a little bit. How is that experience watching your children grow into? So how old are your kids?
They're 11 and 8.
Okay, so I've got a 13 and 8-year-old, and I've got a lot of thoughts and passions around this, what I'm getting ready to talk about, but watching them evolve into little hunters and have success around that. And it's probably because of what you guys have built, their hunting experience is probably much different than you had at 13 as a part of like that. So talk a little bit about, number one, what it means to you and how proud you are to be a dad behind the camera and kind of shift your hunting focus into more them. But number two, your thoughts around like raising them in an environment where like you get a lot of attention, right? Therefore, they get a lot of attention. And so they're not having normal, quote unquote, normal childhoods in the sense where daddy is somewhat famous in the outdoor industry, right? We get a lot of attention. We get a lot of experiences. How do you keep them humble going through all of that?
I'm finally famous in their eyes. I got a YouTube plaque last year for 100,000 subscribers, And you would have thought they didn't even know I had a TV show until that point. They were like, "Oh my God, Dad, you got a YouTube plaque? You're awesome. You're a YouTuber?" I was
That's
like, "Well,
awesome.
I'm not exactly a YouTuber. I wish, you know what I should have done?" Sean and I joke about this. We should have done toy review videos and stuff that tailors to kids, because those are the YouTube channels that are blowing up
Oh,
going
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
no, yeah, man, being a dad is awesome, all across the board. And obviously, comes with a lot of complex things, and it's not all, awesome sunshine and rainbows. But yeah, raising two boys is pretty awesome. When I found out that I was going to be a dad, and obviously, just like all dads are, they're praying that they're going to have a boy, and if they have a daughter, they're still happy, obviously, as long as everything's, healthy and good. But yeah, I was blessed with having two boys, and my wife jokes about it, because she's like, "I'm just surrounded by boys. Even our dog's a boy." And so,
Right.
but she is a boy mom through and through. I mean, she loves the sports side of things, and loves just she's not a girly girl. She's out chopping wood with me the other day, and she's like, "What have you done to me?" Like, she's helping me build a sauna in our basement. Like, she's shooting the nail gun. She's like, "What have you done to me?"
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no,
I've been
you're
seeing your videos and stuff of, the build out. Didn't you broke your nose or something recently? Right.
Yeah, I joked and said I didn't do the dishes, so my wife got me good again.
Right.
But yeah, I had a piece of hardwood flooring, two pieces, one in the forehead, one right on the nose, but actually healing up pretty good. It's been a little over a week, I think. So
That's pretty manly. I mean,
yeah,
if you tell folks that happened, that you get respect there,
I just say
Right.
you should see the other guy.
Right.
So I threw that piece of wood right in my fireplace and burned it and laughed at it. So no. But yeah, no, raising kids in the outdoors is the best. And I just remember growing up, like, some of those most powerful experiences were in the outdoors. And that's just like my whole thing is, like, I try to get my kids outside as much as possible. And we're fortunate to live on some property where they can kind of roam and go. And like, I'm soaking it in, spending time with my oldest, who's 11, like, taking him out hunting. But like, when we were able to buy this property, I was just like, "Man, this is going to be incredible." Like, when he's in junior high and can literally walk out the door and go hunt for a couple hours before school, like, I would have killed to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's awesome to get to see them grow up and riding four wheelers and just doing everything outside. Like, we were outside yesterday cutting firewood and stuff, and I was like, "Let's get out of the house. It's freezing cold." But like, they were helping me cut firewood for a little while, and then they started climbing on trees and messing around, and then they ventured down to the creek, and we're messing around in the frozen creek. And like, I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna head back with this little firewood." And I'm like, "We'll stay here. We'll hike back when we're done." I was like,
Awesome.
"Okay." And so those memories are awesome. But it kind of goes back to what I was talking about with, in business, and not like handing over things, and like spoiling kids to a point to where, like, in the hunting world too, like, we are fortunate to have, these properties, and we're able to spend a ton of time managing these properties and creating this habitat and planting these food plots and setting up these, incredible opportunities to be successful. And from day one, I was like, first and foremost, obviously, you want it to be fun for your kids. But the last thing I wanted to do was, like, pattern this buck for him and this big buck and bring him in and let him shoot this big buck with no appreciation to all the work that goes into it. And so they've grown up since day one, going out, helping work out in the field, helping trim lanes, helping do stuff. I have some photos of my youngest boy that I just absolutely love, like, going out and putting together a hay bale blind and putting it out there with me and my wife. And so they've been a part of the whole process well before they were able to hunt themselves. And so they're definitely learning that work ethic side of it. I actually, to the point, we had a great season this year. We all four tagged out in Missouri, or shot a buck. We can kill two in Missouri, but I kind of limit everybody to one on our property. Obviously, we're shooting 8 bucks a year. It'd be a little much. So we try to shoot one a piece. And this was our first year that we were all able to do that. And, but it was even to a point where I was like, with my oldest going out, like, I had a really, really big younger deer, 3 or 4 year old, that was showing up. And like, we just avoided that area of the farm. I'm letting them shoot, some younger, two, 3 year olds, 4 year old, whatever. Just, I'm letting them, I just wanted them to shoot a nice buck. And so, like, they've both killed, Noah's killed 3 bucks now, my youngest, actually, and my oldest has killed two, but they've kind of worked their way up slowly, and as it should be. Both their first bucks were way bigger than my first buck anyways. So, But it's fun. It's awesome. And my oldest actually, you know, so my youngest has killed 3 bucks, but my youngest is, he's got the bug for the hunting. Like he's like every day, Dad, can we go? Dad, can we go? My oldest is like, hey, Dad, can we go fishing? Can we go fishing? Can we go
Right,
fishing?
right.
And so he loves to hunt too, but he would choose fishing over hunting any day. So got one of
Yeah.
each, which is perfect for me because I love to fish too.
My daughter's 13, and I was the same way, right? I mean, what every man wants a boy, right? So my first kid was a daughter, and she's a lover to death, obviously. But she took to hunting very quickly, and she's killed, I don't know, five or six very nice bucks. Now we're very fortunate. My brother and I have a 1500 acre piece of land here in Virginia that we it's just us on it, and so we get to manage it pretty intensely. But he's got two boys that are young, and then my son is 8, and you mentioned earlier about limiting them on a particular farm. Well, they're also young. My brother and I were like, we're just gonna let them shoot whatever. Now we've been managing and only shooting mature deer for 20 years, right? But
Sure.
now we got these kids, and we're like, let's just let them have fun. Well, last year they shot every 3-year-old on the farm, and then this year they went on. My son killed two Niceland's. My daughter killed one very large buck, and then another like 130 inch, and then my two nephews each killed two apiece. Again, taking out a lot of deer. So now we're trying to explain to like 8, 10, 13-year-olds, like, okay, guys, y'all are having opportunities that not a lot of kids your age have. We got to start passing some deer up, letting them grow and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
you got to think about the future.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And but part of that is, like, to your point, making them a part of the process. So helping with the trail cameras, helping with the food plots and the cleaning the paths and all the stuff we do, making them a part of that so they can understand why we're doing it. And it has been I hunted this year more hours in the stand and in the blind than any other year of my life. And I did not touch a weapon all year. 100% of my hours in the woods, I had my kids by my side, and it was the best year I've ever had hunting in my life. And
Yeah.
that's hard to do. I want to get out there and sling some arrows, but it is, I'm having more adrenaline and excitement these past few years, and I know the years to come. And I know you're living that as well. So pretty awesome.
Yeah. Sean and I talk about that all the time. Like when we first started, especially like, you know, if you're gonna go all in with a buddy and be like, hey, we're filming our hunts and doing this, like there goes half of your time as a hunter.
Right.
But it's so rewarding. It's just as rewarding being behind the camera, like especially in those early days, like just taking pride in like what you're capturing and like filming that hunt. Like I'll never forget Sean killed the buck we called Junior. It was like 100 and like mid 70s buck, 173, I think, and like biggest deer he's ever killed. And we were young, real young at the time, and it was like, I mean, he was like a giant. First year we'd like actually, you know, found some sheds too and watched grow and man, it was opening day, like all came together perfect, and like it was like I was just as proud of that buck as Sean was. I mean, we were just thrilled to be in the moment. So, and a lot of it is the same way with the kids. You get fulfilled through the excitement that they experience, and it's fun to be a part of it, no matter how you're if you're pulling the trigger or not.
Yeah, but and for me, I don't care if it's hunting or on a golf course or on our back porch. It's the only thing that I can imagine, like, where I get to spend not 30 minutes with my kid, like 4 or 5 hour sitting there in a blind, laughing with them, playing the iPad, doing whatever. Like, that's one-on-one time with kids that there's not many other things you can do to get that much quality time day after day after day with your kids. And I didn't have that as a kid, right? I hunted a lot, but I didn't get to spend that much time with people I love in a tree stand or a blind. And so I want to lean into that as much as I can. One last question, and we'll start wrapping things up. The With technology, social media, you talked about YouTube earlier. Since you guys, I mean, y'all been in the game to kind of see it evolve from like the TV show, standard where you get on the Outdoor Channel or whatever the case Sportsman Channel is, to now a YouTube, kind of like y'all used to be able to produce a show and or have a hunting season, and nobody would see those hunts until several months later. Well, now you almost have people want to consume the content almost in real time. So how have y'all evolved in that, you know, from a being able to provide a product that the consumers want under this YouTube, you know, style and real time style content demand?
Yeah, it's gotten way more complex. It used to be way more simpler business. You know, you focus all of our efforts on creating 13 original episodes, and we put all of our time and effort into those. And now, you know, there's so many more boxes to check. And that's been a crucial part of being successful in our business world. It transcends past, you know, beyond the hunting industry. Obviously, you got to be diversified, and you got to be everywhere, and you have to be good at everything. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. And so, yeah, definitely gotten way more complex. But, you know, the we've been fortunate too. Like I always talk about, like, the production side of things. Like once we've grew to a certain point, like Sean and I are like, you know, we love hunting together, but we need to kind of divide and conquer. And so we got producers that kind of travel around with us and go and film with us. And those guys are great. And, you know, they've been with us for several years at least, you know, some of them for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years even. So they're very seasoned. And it's to the point where, like, I don't have to get, when I'm out on going on a hunt, like, I don't have to worry about, like, hey, make sure we get this shot and make sure we do this. And so I've always enjoyed the production side of things. So I've kind of taken a liking to kind of telling that story through my experience and my cell phone and filming, you know, for Instagram stories or creating content for social media. You know, I kind of document the whole hunt, you know, through my phone, and I'll tuck it in my bino harness. And as a deer approaches, getting the shot, like right down the bow, like a POV shot. And I kind of enjoy that process. So there's definitely, you know, and the content has to be different. Every platform, you know, the content has to be created specifically for that platform. If you want to do well, you can't just mass broadcast all the same stuff across all platforms. So it definitely has gotten more complex, but we've grown and built a team, you know, along our side as we have grown to make sure that we stay relevant and stay successful in all those areas.
Yeah. And you're doing a good job of that, obviously. And it's something, you know, cause you're probably my age. I'm 43. You're probably a little bit younger than me. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 38. I'm going to be 39.
So. Yeah, think about it. But I mean, that we like, our kids will have grown up in this, right? And who knows where it'll evolve to then, but it's trying, like I had Aaron Warburton on several months ago from The Hunting Public, and they are filming and doing a pretty good job with production, but getting it out there, like, you know, they'll film a hunt, document it all, and be able to produce it in a YouTube video in a day, right? And I, from an editing standpoint, a production standpoint, I can't fathom that for as much content they're putting out, but they're only doing it on YouTube, right? And that's their style. And I was curious, because you guys, with such good production, you know, you to have it almost going out real time, and you kind of answered that with, like, doing shorts and reels and stuff with your cell phone content, but you would, to get a good quality, high produced hunt like you guys are accustomed to and your fans are accustomed to, there's no way it's going to be hunt Monday and it's out Wednesday, right? That I can't, you know, the full hunt. So y'all still have a good blend of catch the shows on when they come out and see the full story and the full hunt, and then that short content as well. So
yeah. And we've done some semi-live type stuff as we have grown our team and have guys that can, you know, turn around edits, you know, guys that aren't traveling and hunting and capturing, you know, filming in the field, guys that are just solely dedicated to editing. And so that's kind of helped as well. But yeah, we will not sacrifice you know, the quality and the production standard on our end, even in a world where, you know, sometimes the more raw, you know, less well edited stuff does better on YouTube. Right. We're just not going to go, you know, away from what our company was founded on. There's definitely elements that we integrate into, you know, those productions that are different than what we would do for a film or TV episode. But yeah, we're hanging our hat on quality, have since day one, and that won't ever change.
Love it, man. Well,
Warb's a great dude, by the way. Good friend of
what's
mine.
that?
We went to college together. Warb.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I,
Small town.
so yeah. So Warb and I went to college together before either one of us was doing, we were getting started with HP. I just remember him as a turkey hunting nut, and
Yeah.
he was working for a turkey call company, repping some calls, and like was like, was like talking to me about calls and stuff. And so yeah, we had a bunch of mutual friends in college and stuff. So both Missouri boys, and
Yeah.
both went to Mizzou there.
That's awesome. Yeah, he was very, very kind, as you are, to come on here and kind of share the business side of things and stuff like that. So, where do you guys, just kind of high level, where do you guys see things going? I mean, you're obviously still young. You got a lot of career and growth ahead of you, or are you kind of comfortable where you're at, or like where do y'all envision things going the next 5, 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, we are constantly reevaluating, our business model and the industry, and how things are changing. They're changing so rapidly, and so we're always making adjustments and trying to stay at the forefront of all that. I joke around about that because, the typical like TV world or content world like is pretty quick turn, like the Duck Commander guys and the having that reality show, like that's a short window where you're going to be nuts for 3 years, 5 years. You make it when you can, and you take advantage of that situation, and then it kind of fizzles out. And not that those guys obviously haven't had other opportunities, obviously well beyond that, but it's like not like the reality show world where like that's going to be your year or 2 years. The guys that have been in the hunting industry, if they've been in it forever, I mean, you still look at some of all the original guys that were, on Monster Bucks and Hunter Specialties, primetime stuff like back in the day, Bill Jordan and like all those guys, like Michael Waddell's been around since he was a kid. And so like the longevity in this industry is great. And as I do, my kids grow and they do get older. If they do have a passion, to be involved, hopefully they'll help me stay hip and appeal to the younger generation. Keep getting those YouTube awards.
Right. You talk about the YouTube award. My son is obsessed with Kendall Gray. Are you familiar with Kendall Gray?
I'm not, no.
Right.
I
He's
if you show me a picture of him, I'd know. I guarantee you, I've
yeah.
probably seen him, but I don't know his name.
He's like 22, 23 years old. He's got like 10 million YouTube followers, and he's a hunter, so he's filming himself just doing goofy stuff in the woods and stuff like that. And it's pretty entertaining, again, for but Kendall's actually he's coming on the podcast, and
Oh, cool.
but it is going to be interesting because he grew up in this world, and now he's building a business around this YouTube and appealing to the folks like my son and stuff like that. And it'd be interesting to get his perspective on where he sees this going, because it's all he had known, and
Is he a younger guy, you said, or no?
yeah, he's like 22, 23.
Okay, I was thinking of a different guy. My son will send me these funny, like, spoof videos that this guy does, and he did like he sent me one the other day of a dad taking his son hunting and like telling him to be quiet, and then the kid slams the door, and then it's just funny, funny content like that. So that's something that I enjoy a lot, actually, that it was so bad over the years, like people.
I don't know if you could see that, but
Oh yeah, yep.
yeah.
Okay, yeah, I do recognize him. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like my son will watch his videos 20 times and then he reenacts them, and he's got to set up his little stuffed animal deer and all that stuff, and he's
That's funny.
obsessed with it, but yeah, it's good stuff.
I love the comedy side of things. Like
Yeah.
it was tried back in the day of like everybody was like trying to be big personality, be funny, and like I'm much more of a fan of like the dumb, obviously fake, funny stuff that
Right,
people,
right.
so I love the Instagram reels, and
Yep.
there's a handful of guys in the hunting space doing those now, and they obviously relate. I relate really well to those, but so I get a good laugh out of all that.
The one we laugh at the most, and we'll wrap it up here soon, but there's a video of, I'm sure you've seen the video of Luke Bryan shooting a deer, and is he down? Is he down? Have you seen that
Yeah.
video?
Oh, yeah.
The guy made a spoof video of that as like his cameraman, and
I saw that one. That was
it's
good.
hilarious. But my kids, without fail, every time they shoot a deer, after like the nerves are calmed down, they look at, is he down? Is he down?
Yeah.
On that video. So it's good stuff. But Michael, man, I can't thank you enough, dude. This has been a pleasure to meet you and talk to you, and kind of get a different perspective and view into what you guys are doing. A lot of folks see the the hunts and the stories and all that stuff, but to kind of hear the growth on the business side and y'all's visions and how those have evolved over the years and raising your families within that, I really appreciate, and I think our listeners will as well.
Yeah. Well, I hate to break it to everybody that I don't hunt for a living, but I run a business that allows me a lot of time in the field. So it's a lot of work, a lot of time in the office still, but yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, y'all's authenticity and your personalities, all that shines through. It has for years. And you know, it's for anybody that, you know, is listening and doesn't know much about hunting or, you know, what it's all about, go follow Heartland Bowhunter and look them up and check out what they're doing, because you guys expose a lot more than just finding an animal and killing it, right? I mean, it is a passion, and that, you know, watching them and seeing what it's all about doesn't mean you have to go out there and mimic it and hunt. It just means that there is a different perspective and way of life out there that can be enjoyed with your family and build good relationships and all that stuff, and you guys are living it. So again, I appreciate you coming on here and taking the time. I mean, I will say this, I got to shout you out for this. I reached out to you back in sometime last year, like September, October, asking you to do this. Number one, I reach out to a lot of folks asking them to come on. You were kind enough to respond, but you, in a subtle way, revealed to me who you are in that response by saying, I'm very busy. We're getting into hunting season and I have a family. I've got to respect my time with them. So I'm going to have to tell you no now. And you asked me to follow up later after hunt season. I did. And now you're here. So
yeah,
protecting that time for what matters most to you. I can relate to that and I appreciate it. And, tells me who you really are, man. So I really thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we were able to make it happen and get on the calendar. And, I appreciate the conversation.
Go Chiefs.
Yeah. Go Chiefs. I'll be there.
What's the weather look like for the game on Sunday?
Not too terrible, actually. This week was way colder for sure. So it'll be cold, but it's not going to be crazy. So,
well, I'll be watching and rooting for y'all, man. So take care. Y'all have fun. And thanks again, man.
Yep, you too.
All right, have a good one. Man, what a treat that was. Michael Hunsucker, again, as I mentioned early on in this show, Michael has been someone I've looked up to in the outdoor space and industry for years. They've been around for years. They've evolved through all the changes in the media space. They've evolved with social media and the advent of that, while never compromising, as you heard him say, their core values and the things that, you know, created what they are. They stayed true to those values when it came to dealing with sponsors. Oftentimes, as he mentioned, you know, foregoing probably more money, right? But sticking true to those values, I don't care what industry you're in. When you have a set of beliefs and ethics and values and things like that, those are the foundation, and that's what you build upon. And if you get a crack in that foundation, then everything else eventually will crumble. But if you can keep that foundation strong, keep it, you know, that's what it was built upon. And again, this goes for any in personal life, business, entrepreneurship, whatever, but build a strong foundation, stay true to that, evolve as needed without compromising that foundation and those values and those core beliefs, and success will come. They are not an overnight success. They've been in the business for coming up on 20 years, right? And it's a very difficult industry to make it in. And they've done that by being creative, but more than anything else, being authentic to who they are and what they believe in and how they do things. So it was a real treat to kind of peel the layers of the onion back a little bit, get to know Michael a little bit better. You know, you feel like you watch these guys on TV, and the same with like listening to podcasts, you feel like you know them, right? I've never met Michael. That was the first time I've sat down and talked with him. But he is, obviously, spending an hour with him in a conversation, he is who I thought he was, you know, behind the camera. And that is what makes them successful. They're not fake. There's nothing fake about what they're doing. They are who they are. They show that on camera. They show it through the stories they tell. So I encourage all of you to, you know, whether you're a hunter or not, or if you're into that, they do all of their content, all of their videos or shows, everything they put out is tastefully done. And it really tells a story beyond just killing an animal, right? But I encourage you to check them out, and you'll see very quickly checking out their content, the passion that they have and the commitment they have to putting out a good product. And I think that's inspiring, regardless if you're a hunter or not, or if you're trying to build a business in that space or some other space, like we're in real estate. I find inspiration seeing other individuals in other industries build something based off authenticity. And that's what they do. And I think y'all will find the same inspiration, not just listening to what you just listened to, but checking out their content. So I'll link all that below in the show notes for you guys to check out. But what a great conversation. I really enjoyed that. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.